Hey, everybody. Good morning. It is Friday, and we don't have Simpiwe here yet. She's running late. James's grand died, so he's not in this morning, but we do have Flex. Flex, you've become the most reliable person on the staff. Well done. Yeah, and he's tough as well. He's like shouting the orders around. I like this. I might just make him in charge of everything, you know. We should put him in the driver's seat. Let's see what happens. Speaking of the driver's seat, I don't know how you felt about President Gwede Mantashe over the last few days. Did anyone feel an improvement? No. Yeah, he was our acting president while Cyril was in the Oval Office, basically having his nose rubbed into his mess on the carpet. But we'll talk about that in a second. I think that's pretty much the story of the week, especially here in South Africa. People are justifiably interested, curious. Everyone's talking to each other about it. There are people who have no idea what to make of it. There are people who see very clear things happening. I see in the comments section there are a lot of people who have lots to say. We'll get to it, I promise you, in the next 5 minutes. No more and no less, because it's been something that I've been thinking about too. I watched the whole thing live as it was unfolding on Wednesday. Made for gripping television. That's all I said afterwards. I don't think that we will ever be able to turn back to the way politics used to be. I don't just mean South Africa, I mean the world. I mean this idea of politics being this very sweet, kind, people say to each other, you know, whatever they need to say to be polite and diplomatic when the cameras are on and when they're dealing with the media. And then as soon as they get behind closed doors, they start getting into the real stuff. Well, those days are gone, because now, and not just because of Trump, but largely brought about by him, and certainly being taken on by other leaders all over the world, you're seeing that it's pretty much what goes on behind the scenes is what's going to go on in front of the cameras now. And there's no more pretending, performative stuff. These guys are going to have to catch up quickly. And the politicians who can't, who are still going by the old ways, will just be eaten up for breakfast. And we can therefore move on swiftly to what happened to our president and our South African delegation when they arrived at the Oval Office. I can't believe this, but they arrived a half an hour late. And it just reminded me, I don't know if you remember this, I'm sure you do, you know, just 4 or 5 years ago, the same president used to call family meetings. You remember those? And we'd all have to sit around the TV, probably in the middle of load shedding, so you might not have even had TV. But he was never on time for any of those things. And, you know, you're going to America with a begging bowl, which is pretty much what he said when he arrived in the Oval Office and the cameras were switched on. He said, you know, we need your help and we want your technology and with your support, all of this stuff that he was saying to Donald Trump. But if you're going to ask people for things, you arrive on time. You don't arrive late and then go, oh, and I'll have some of that, please. It's not going to go well for you. Anyway, that was the beginning, and it didn't go much better for him from there. But I don't want to talk about what actually happened. There are enough memes that are going into that. I want to talk about what it means. And there are three things to me that came out of that meeting. The first one of those is that we have a completely useless government that don't know what the hell they're doing. And now everyone in the world can see it. Because for the longest time, South Africa has been given a free pass, you know, because of our history here. We had this miraculous story in 1994 where the whole country went and voted. Everybody participated. We started to show the rest of the world that reconciliation was possible, that we could build a rainbow nation together. Well, that dream has kind of died, and it died because the government that we have has just run the place into the ground. I see there's a story today about Knysna, which is a beautiful little town on the Garden Route, which used to be a bit of a playground for millionaires and was always such a gem in South Africa. It was just naturally very beautiful. It was a place of tremendous stories, you know, of great history, a place which really just from every angle was magnificent to see. And I see now they can't keep their water working, their infrastructure's collapsing. This is the story of South Africa writ large. And you even got that from the Kasatu lady. I don't know if you saw that, but there were only two ministers or two members of Cyril's delegation proper. that spoke, and by proper I mean that he took over as government representatives. The one was John Steenhuisen, the Minister of Agriculture, and then the other one who spoke was the chair of COSATU, the largest trade union in South Africa. And she said, like, our country's a violent disgrace. That's pretty much what she was there to talk Cyril up, you know? And when he gave her the mic, she was like, ah, well, we rape and murder women. It's a very violent place. It's a disaster. You don't want to go there. Nothing works. Didn't go very well. So everyone in the world now knows that our country is run by the most incompetent people on planet Earth. And you can't hide that anymore because it was all said on live TV by the people who fall under the man who's meant to be leading the country. So very embarrassing. I think that's number one. We had a whole bunch of golfers talking too. They didn't help the case, by the way. Neither Ernie Els nor Retief Goosen helped the case for Cyril. I think they were very honest and I commend them for that. I was kind of dismissive and said, why are they taking golfers along? But I also found out afterwards, can't verify this at this stage, but that it was actually Donald Trump who invited them and not Cyril, which is interesting because people have been speculating, well, where does he get his information about South Africa? You know, a lot of people who are in the lying mainstream media keep saying he gets all his misinformation from somewhere. The reality is that these two golfers were there. They didn't help Cyril's case either. Retief Goosen pretty much admitted that his family in Polokwane have to live behind electric fences and worry every night that they're going to be attacked. His mother was attacked. It's a horrible, like, it couldn't have been worse from a storytelling point of view. Ernie Els said something like, yeah, well, in 31 years, nothing has happened. The country's just got worse. And it's not a place he wants to live in anymore. You know, Johann Rupert's building a cottage somewhere and he sleeps with his door open. So it didn't go well, is what I'm trying to say. Our country's run badly. Everybody knows we can't hide that anymore. The second thing that came out of it was a whole lot of policy stuff, which has to do with what South Africa's got to do to get its act together and sort out its problems. And a lot of the important stuff that happened in that conversation would have happened in the non-press part of it afterwards, where they actually had lunch. I heard it was very, very tough from sources I know. I heard that there was no theatrics. There was no performance going on there. It was all basically policy. And the United States will not invest in this country if we don't guarantee private property. So no expropriation bill, that has to go. The ANC's got to change their BEE policy because it's only enriching a few very, very well-connected people in the ANC for all the reasons we've discussed on the show before. They got to can it. It's not going to happen. And then there are other moves that the ANC's got to change its trajectory on, not only because Donald Trump and the rest of the world are looking at us going, what a basket case, you should be embarrassed about yourselves, but because for the ANC to survive, they have to change. So I hate to start a Friday morning with all of this, but this is what people have been talking about for the last few days, and this is what I'm distilling out of it. The ANC has to change because it is already on a losing trajectory. It is headed for the hills, and not in a good way. If you look at the last election and the fact that they are no longer the governing party, they now have to govern in coalition with people they hate, like the DA or the Freedom Front Plus or, you know, Yaton McKenzie. They don't want to do that. They want to be able to do what they've always done, have complete control of government, and they can't. So if they want to survive, they have to give up all this National Democratic Revolution bullshit, this preoccupation with 1970s Soviet era stupidity. It's just got to end at some point. So that's the second thing that comes out of it. The third thing that comes out of it, and this is a very, very interesting one. I think it's also very controversial. Probably a lot of people won't agree with me. But I think that meeting in the Oval Office brought up something which we've all been pretending doesn't exist. It brought up that it is no longer acceptable for people to spread anti-white discrimination or sentiment or racism, whatever you want to call it. But for the longest time, it's been absolutely fine for everybody in the world to allow a little bit of anti-white racism in. And in fact, some people don't even believe that that's possible because they say, well, racism by definition can't be against white people. They're uniquely evil in the world. Their history is peculiar to inventing things like racism, which is obviously nonsense, because every race, every tribe, every culture, every creed in the world has done good and bad things. And some of them have done horrific things and they get away scot-free, and some of them get guilt and get punished for the rest of eternity. Now, Donald Trump doesn't give a shit about that stuff, but he doesn't want anyone to be treated differently, whether they're white or black. He said as much during his conversation with Cyril. And I think that the real reason that so many people on the left and so many people in the media are furious about the last couple of weeks of what's happened here, the white refugees, the Oval Office meeting, Cyril being ambushed, these were their talking points, right? Is because deep down inside they can see the writing on the wall, that it's slowly becoming impossible for you to continue to be an anti-white racist. And this is a good thing. I don't see any negative to this. I myself have often in the past made jokes about, you know, poor whites and laughed about white people who consider themselves victims and all the rest of it. But I think we're living in an age now where people of any background, any religious or cultural or ethnic or racial bent can be victimized. And to pretend that white people are somehow special, that they are either the only ones that you can be racist about or the only ones that can be guilty of racism, is ludicrous. That's almost giving white people magical power. And I think that's extremely dangerous. It's led us down some very dark paths. And I think the way that you can get away with that sort of sentiment in the world and in the media is just becoming very unfashionable. And a good thing it is. So those are the three big takeaways. I'd love to know what you thought. I wish we could all sleep like Rupert one day. Not filthy rich, but safe. Well, look, I don't think that did him any favors. I don't think he meant it as, you know, I can sleep because I'm wealthy and I don't know what danger is. I mean, you know, he did mention, Johann Rupert did mention that he is often the target of, you know, the white monopoly capital guys when they were still a thing, remember? And he did. He has largely pulled out of South Africa from a business point of view. He has very little here in the way of business interests compared to what he's got overseas. He still has interests here and he still spends some of his time here. And we should be very pleased about that, because when people come to South Africa and they spend money in South Africa and they live here and they invest here, small as it may be compared to the rest of his investments, we should be pleased for that. But I don't think like anyone in that meeting was our enemy. And frankly, I would not have wanted to be Cyril Ramaphosa. I think he had a very, very tough ask, and I think he actually did okay. People aren't going to like that. But I don't think he was victorious, and I think he was tremendously successful, like, you know, the News 24s are saying he was, because he came away with nothing, and there was a lot of humiliation there. And I have seldom seen a president begging like you saw Cyril. I mean, he was so servile and submissive. You know when a dog rolls over and shows you its tummy, because it's like, please, don't hurt me. It felt like that. And I don't think Donald Trump was particularly aggressive. It was just what we all expected to happen. Well, certainly if you'd listened to this show, you would have known what to expect. And I don't like seeing our president being humiliated. I don't like seeing our country being humiliated. But for the longest time, the rest of the world has just either ignored us or turned a blind eye to the things that shouldn't be happening, like the destruction of the economy, rank corruption, a mismanagement of pretty much everything, including basic things like the electricity grid, water. We now have the world's attention on us, so we better use it for good. But I don't want to see our president crawling around, nervously giggling, being made to watch videos of embarrassing, embarrassing, terrible things that are going on in South Africa, just as Trump once said, that got so many people fired up. There are terrible, there are very bad things happening. Yeah, you could watch a whole video of it if you wanted to. And we were all forced to. Thank you very much. So in the end, I hope it leads to some kind of good. I just hope it gets us to a point where we step aside from the bullshit and we get this country working. The average South African is not obsessed with black and white. The average South African is not obsessed with the past. The average South African is desperate to make a living, to live happily in cooperation and conjunction with his or her neighbors. The average South African just wants to turn on the lights and they'll come on. The average South African just wants to pay tax so that the roads work, so that they can do the things they want to do, raise their kids, live in a way that's better than the way that they're used to. That would be great. And if anything good comes out of this, whether it's by the hand of Cyril Ramaphosa or Donald Trump, or by the good work of the South African citizen, you and me, let's get it going. I don't want to have us turning around and around in circles anymore. Anyway, Judas says the biggest letdown is there was no comeback after everything was exposed. None of them mentioned what they were going to do to improve crime in the country. It's very sad. Yeah, I don't know. Again, actions will speak louder than words here, but I don't think this is the last we're going to hear about this story. If anybody thinks that go to the Oval Office now, Cyril, and you know, you've placated Trump satisfactorily and he's had his say, that it's all going to go away now. It's not going to happen. It's going to continue to be an issue. And they're going to be following it. And the American media is now all over it. I was happy that nothing was sugar-coated, says Signet, and the truth came out. Better to play open cards, else the world will see through the political bullshit. Well, we can't hide it anymore. We can't hide how badly this place is being run. And thanks to the internet. And I don't know if you saw, but Elon was there. David Sachs was in the meeting. They were all standing in the background. Trump was the only guy from the U.S. delegation to talk. Did you notice that? We had our president talking. We had Ernie and Retief. We had Stiernazen. We had Johann Rupert. We had the president of COSATU. They had just Donald Trump. No one else said anything. He had this high-powered team there, and nobody else said a damn thing. So either he said, I'm going to handle this, let me do this, or the rest of them just didn't think it was necessary to hop in. I don't know. Anyway, Bitcoin Butt says, I wish we could all sleep like Rupert one day. yeah, and then he also says, someone else says about that, Johann Rupert must go to the toilet with a security team in South Africa. I think our team did fairly, says Vyasin. Trump was a bit overboard with his worksheets, flipping through it saying, thousand, death, 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 when it looked like he had 50. Nothing will change, says Steve. Well, Steve, it's always nice to have your positivity on the show. We've got to live in hope, dude. It's pretty much a South African thing that we live in hope, you know? Dirk says we need to ride the wave of awareness because in 2 weeks the media will move on to something else. Yeah, I don't think that some people in the South African media will move on to something else because they're obsessed with this. You know, they're obsessed with kind of trundling out the same old narrative, but they don't realize that it's just not sticking anymore. So we'll see what happens. I fell asleep watching it, says Slippery Pickle. You kidding? That was pretty good TV. Just from a TV point of view, I think it was well done. Ryan says, remember there was a private meeting too. Yes, that was afterwards. And then apparently what Trump does with everybody is he takes them to the one room next to the Oval Office and he goes, this is the blowjob room. And then they go, huh? And he goes, this is where Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton. And you get, like, that's how you get introduced to that room. Johann Peter Rupert's the only one who made sense. Some people just, like, suddenly have become massive Rupert fans. You know, it's amazing. Some of those people were also the ones who hated him before. So you guys are going to make your mind up. Either you are sensible about this and all people are a little bit good and a little bit bad, or you hero worship and you villainize. And if you hero worship and villainize, I don't know how to tell you this, but you're going to be changing your mind a lot, embarrassingly, in public. Carla Funavestes and says, Cyril was like the project leader who had to keep referring to the people who actually did the work. Well, you know, again, our planning, I don't know if they had a rehearsal, if they discussed what they were going to do, but it didn't seem like there was much planning going on there. And, you know, Cyril, we know, is always surprised by everything. Here in South Africa, oh, I didn't know the CBD of Joburg was such a mess. How did this happen? And I don't know where the guy's getting his news, whether he gets an executive briefing from our intelligence services every day, because he should, as president. But he seems to be surprised by a lot of things. Oh, I don't know where I've put my iPad. You know? Like, dude, you're an embarrassment. Just get your shit together. I don't think he's ever had to work as hard as he did on Wednesday. The guy was sweating. He was struggling. He was suffering. A part of me felt very sorry for him. And that's what being a president's meant to be, hard work. But, you know, I don't think he's done that much hard work in the last couple of years. I think he's used to everybody being sycophantic, bowing and scraping, and get away with whatever he wants, smiles, passes someone some money, then they leave him alone. That's kind of what he's used to. He's not used to actually being forced to account for himself, which is great. Let's hope that that fear that we saw on his face stays there, because the people of South Africa should be able to bring that fear to all of our politicians. Let's go that way. I've got Simpiwe here. Look at how you snuck
Good
in.
Good morning.
Hello, Sims. Yeah. Was there traffic?
A bit.
Was it?
No, a bit now.
Getting out of the cold bed.
It was. You know what happened? My little one woke me up at like 3 o'clock. And then I was like, oh, I still have a bit of time. Let me go back to bed. Worst decision ever. Because then waking up the second time around, you don't hear the alarm.
I didn't
and then
it.
You're just like, oh, crap. I need to get out of here.
I still don't have power.
Oh.
Because it's not a very interesting story. We talked about it on Wednesday. But they blew up or sabotaged or caught the fire substation caught fire. I don't know what.
You know, so, it's going to take 3 years to fix that, eh?
Jesus. Well, then I'm leaving. Then I'm going to be a refugee.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't see any reason to put up with that shit.
You're going to leave your house, your family.
Absolutely.
I will sell your mom.
I will sell everything. Sell everything and start again. Because that's not fun. But if they get it fixed in a week or two, then I'll be happy. Anyway, because of that, I don't have any hot water. So getting ready in the mornings is nightmarish. You know, cold showers and shit.
With this cold front.
But also light, you know, like I didn't know. I could have been wearing a clown outfit when I walked out of the house this morning, so I'm just glad I'm dressed, you know.
Okay, so you know how to put yourself together in the dark. That's good. That is
so Dirk says he had almost a decade. Cyril, this is, and we're all talking about Cyril and Trump. Everybody is, right?
Yeah,
he had almost a decade to prepare for this moment. He knew this would eventually catch up with him.
No.
What do you think? Because you just arrived.
I don't think so. I think they put a good foot forward, I guess. Not their best.
Oh, it was all right.
I think gifting him that golf book was a very good idea, knowing that that Trump loves golf. I think they should have actually said pounds and not 14 kilograms. You know, Americans. But I also think, like, they spoke the truth in terms of there are horrible things happening in South Africa.
Very bad things.
Which is crime, you know, which is just crime. And I think the one part I did enjoy is when they threw Jones DNAs and under the bus and it's like,
white minister. Did you hear that? Like, again, this is the only kind of reference to race that's acceptable in the world today, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's embarrassing for us as a country. This is our white minister. He actually said, and this is my white minister. And I'm like, dude.
Because that's how we talk.
That's tokenism.
But that's how we talk
but
as South Africans.
Imagine if I said, and this is my black friend, Simpiwe. You know, I just know that that will be accepted by nobody. That's wrong.
Oh.
So when Cyril says that, it's embarrassing and you can't talk like that. You say it's just like how we talk. I was saying earlier, if anything comes out of this meeting, there are three things for me. The failure of our government, that they just look stupid all over the world.
Oh, yes.
Number two, that there will be all kinds of policies that have to be changed, that we have to negotiate, that we have to get our act in order if we want American investment and help from America. Because, my God, did they all beg. Even if you want to see two billionaires begging, just watch again and again. Just rewind and fast forward and rewind.
But it's amazing how
Johann
money.
Rupert and Cyril Ramaphosa begging Donald Trump. I mean, if he...
I knew that was going to happen. So that's the one thing we know about Cupcake, is that he's always going to ask for money wherever he goes, right? He always has them pam, 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 pam. But what was also interesting to see was like how even you white guys want money, because you guys are changing your tune in terms of, oh, yes, there is no white farmers genocide. But now when you're talking in front of Donald, like, no, there isn't, you know, but there is crime happening. Like, you know, it's like...
Yeah, but I do think that we have... No one in the media, and I think the media bears a lot of responsibility for this. no one in the media, certainly internationally and even here locally, the mainstream media, have taken the issues of farm killings, black or white people, but farm killings seriously.
Mm-hmm.
We know that living in rural South Africa is damn dangerous,
don't
right?
Do that.
You don't. You don't want to. And we know that there are, we have an extraordinary murder rate in this country. We have an extraordinary rate of violence against women and children. We have a major problem.
Mm.
And the woman from Kasatu basically sold us down the river as well by saying we're a very violent society. I mean, yeah. I don't know. Someone who's planning their holiday is like, oh, well, let me see what Trump's up to. Oh, my God. I booked a holiday in South Africa. Cancel, cancel, cancel. That's not great. She did us no favors.
Yeah, I think that was also the issue where they were like, they just admitted to defeat because Trump was prepared. He was like, I got videos.
Oh, my
God.
I got
screenshots.
Dim the lights.
You guys, he was ready for the spectacle. And all they could do was like, Cyril with his face, huh?
Yeah.
And is that
I'm so surprised.
Yeah, is that in South Africa? Where is this from? And I feel like they should have, if they knew that the angle was going to be like, there's just crime in South Africa. Also talk about something else. Say, but Cape Town is one of the most, you know, beautiful things. Like also.
Johan Rupert did. He said John Steenhuisen runs Cape Town and it's more, there are more people murdered there than anywhere else.
That doesn't help. But I'm just saying, like, do something to sugarcoat it or take narrative to say, okay, yes, we came to talk about these white farmers, you've taken 49 of our Afrikaans
refugee
people, you know. Brakpan's very empty now. But, you know, but then come with something else.
Is Brakpan very empty?
Yeah, it is, hey? It is. Actually, I'm like, I might miss one or two, hey? But I'm just saying. And then come with a different narrative to say, but Trump, did you know this? Then you would have gotten him off guard.
Well. I
but
think,
no, you went
I think
to ask
he
for money.
Had he had an agenda. A lot of people were expecting him to bring up the ICJ case against Israel. A lot of people were expecting him to bring up more economic interests, American companies, the financial changes he wants to see in our system. He didn't bring up any of that. He had a goal,
yes.
And he was single-minded about it, and he delivered on that goal for his.
And Elon
agenda.
Musk was like giving them the stare down. Like yes, that's all he did. He was just
Elon Musk looked pissed off, huh?
Yes. If looks could kill. I don't think we'd have a president today. Because damn, what a wow.
Yeah, that was quite something. But all in all, we are still here. We have things to do. We have a country that's worth not giving up on. And our president is going to, I think, I hope, I pray, come back with a little seriousness in his demeanor.
Mm-hmm.
Not because he's been told to do so, but because finally everybody's watching and it counts and it makes a difference. So there are a lot of funny memes going around. Have you got that picture of the kind of Trump Ramaphosa? There. that's a good combo, right? Like whoever that guy is, he looks like he'd be a better president for all of us. It's like the best of both worlds, or maybe the worst.
Oh, my word.
So there's that. Then this is a funny one that someone sent me with all these guys like looking like they've had a huge party at the White House afterwards. Cyril,
oh my gosh.
Cyril laughing in the background, Ernie and Johan and Donald and Elon. I mean, I don't think any of that happened because there was a press conference afterwards where or the president was getting into or out of a car and going somewhere. And a journalist asked him something and he you could hear his voice was like a little bit weak. I think he had a really rough day.
Yeah, but I think he'll play some golf afterwards because that's what Trump also does, play a lot of golf.
Yeah, it's definitely something he cares about, right? So Ben was right. Ben was right. Golf does matter. We're going to say that on a show where he's not here.
Who would have thought?
Yeah. We're going to say that while he's not here because I don't want him to get a bigger head than he already has about it.
But yeah, it might be the answer to everything, hey? Invite your golf friends.
After the Kasatu lady, Trump is like, fuck the G20, says Cygnus. Yeah. Absolutely. Turn down the lights must become a meme. Turn down the lights. In fact, yeah, if you're lucky enough to get some action this weekend, the first thing you must do is go, turn down the lights. Oh, it's good. You got to be able to laugh at this shit. And then while we're talking about laughing, we haven't spoken about Gorlok the Destroyer for a long time.
Oh my
I mentioned
gosh.
Her in passing on Wednesday when James thought I was referring to Gorlok the Destroyer, but I was actually referring to someone else. But This has got to be one of the best clips I've ever seen.
Oh, let's see it.
This guy is about to watch a Gorlok the Destroyer interview or clip or something, and watch what happens.
No. No.
You know, he's probably like, that costs so much money. You just ruined so much.
Like, I love that Gorlok is so enormous that he, she can break the computer the guy's watching on from a distance.
She's all not invited right to do any more interviews.
So this is a report for this morning that after a seemingly tense meeting between the two presidents, President Cyril Ramaphosa is expressing optimism about future relations with the U.S.
Oh, it went very well. We are very happy. It went very well.
Ramaphosa described his meeting with U.S. President Donald Trump as a great success. The president discussed a number of issues, including trade and Trump's claims of land seizures and genocide. Well, it's not Trump's claims. We have an expropriation bill. This government created an expropriation bill. Let's talk about claims of land seizures as if there's no such thing. Why would you make an expropriation bill if you don't intend to expropriate property? I'll wait. There isn't an answer. And the genocide thing we've dealt with. We've spoken about this for like 2 weeks now. I'm sick of it. No one said it was a genocide except Donald Trump. Okay, find me the source. Find me the person who says genocide in South Africa, who's using that word. It's a bit more complicated to describe it as whatever you want to describe it as rather than genocide. Can we just move on from that, please? The local media are obsessed with two words, genocide and refugees. Obsessed with them.
Yes.
Do you know that word has been used more in the last 3 or 4 weeks? That, you know, if you do a Google search, you can check how a term is used over time. It's been used more in the last 2 to 4 weeks than it was ever used in the whole of the internet before then in South Africa.
And there's been actual genocides happening.
Oh, yeah, like Rwanda, like Myanmar, like the Holocaust. Those are proper. And this is the one that people are talking about. It's ridiculous. Anyway.
Fake news.
Fake news. Trump continued to assert that a form of genocide is taking – assert rather than a form of genocide. Now, listen. It may not be genocide, but that does not mean that we shouldn't be talking about it. This has to do with the safety and security of South Africans, farmers, farm workers, our food security. This is a big deal. And the media in this country and many people in the political classes don't talk about it. They pretend it doesn't exist. For the longest time, this very government of ours said there are no such things as farm murders. It doesn't happen. That's what they told us. They lied. So when Trump shows a video of all the crosses, which he called burial sites, they were not burial sites, but they were crosses. They were memorials to people who've been killed. Each one of those represents a life, a human life that is gone as a result of crime. Crime, which is particularly bad in rural parts of South Africa. So let's be honest about it. Call it what it is. Anyway, he says it's particularly targeting white Afrikaners. Well, they're the farmers, right? Mostly. His administration recently granted 49 Afrikaners refugee status in the U.S. And right, Simpiwe is right. These are not going to be guys who are going to suddenly pick up the American economy and become, you know, Elon Musk version 2.
No.
These are probably people, and you would not be a refugee if you were someone who could fix your life yourself. I don't mean this in a nasty, disrespectful way. We were talking earlier about how the only kind of bias that's tolerated in the world today and people join in is like anti-white stuff. I'm not going to do that. But these guys were, in the words of my American friend I had dinner with last night, a bit ratty.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, a bit ratty. And then when I said to her, but you wouldn't say that about a Puerto Rican who came across the border, and she said, no, I don't think I would. So I said, yeah, so we shouldn't really be like singling them out for being trashy, even though they probably were. I think all refugees are trashy. That's why they're refugees. So at least you can't accuse me of being biased because I think all of them are trashy. But I will say this. We're obsessed with whether they fit the definition of refugee or whatever else. What you're seeing more and more is a total collapse of the left's core values. the core values of the political left in the world, which have been the values of Western liberal democracies for the last 20 or so years. Mm-hmm. And they're falling apart now. So it's time for the new stuff. Either you catch up and you open up and you start talking about the new stuff, or you get left behind and you'll find yourself dwindling round and round in an ever-decreasing crowd of people in an old, dusty building. That's what's going to happen to people who don't see the new way of doing things. I think it's exciting. Let's see where it goes. I mentioned Knysna earlier. Knysna?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know where Knysna is?
Yes.
Okay, so have you ever been there?
No, I haven't.
Okay, you're not missing much. But
don't say that.
It's nice, especially not now. So it used to be a haven for wealthy South Africans and international buyers. They're facing a severe crisis. I mentioned this in the opening of the show this morning. The municipality has declared a state of emergency due to collapsing water supply and widespread service delivery failures. The story of Knysna is the story of the rest of the country, right?
Yeah, basically.
I mean, I was just joking about the substation that blew up near me, but this is the kind of shit that happens either because things aren't maintained, or people steal things, or people sabotage and burn things. Now, I've heard that my municipality, we'll get back to Knysna in a second, the unions or the municipal workers they're arguing because they didn't get an automatic increase. You know, because it's meant to be automatic. You're doing the same job, if not you're doing a worse job than you did last year, but you want an increase. And, of course, the municipality in Tshwane is broke because I think our mayor's from Action SA or something, and they can't pass a budget because they don't have enough support, or I don't know what's happening. But Tshwane, Pretoria, is a fucking disgrace, and Knysna now is as well. Sure. And that's why things like this are happening.
But what's, like, I don't understand, Bazix. I really don't, because it's been raining. I know that there's some places they haven't had water. You don't have electricity. No. And you're just like, you know, if you think about it, it's been raining. The reservoirs have been, like, full.
The Vaal Dam is, like, 100-something%.
Yes, and then there's places with no water, and you ask yourself, how, though? Like, what is going on? Where are we getting this wrong?
Because the guys who are meant to be managing it don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's cadres who've been deployed and politicians who are bickering with each other and Action SA trying to get in on the action.
They bore me.
Literally.
Yeah. And then also,
and the only people who suffer are us.
I know, right?
Right.
And apparently there's going to be like a fuel increase because Minister of Finance is trying to get more money. So now he's taxing petrol, and I'm just like,
so
this
instead
guy,
of the VAT increase, which he was trying to push through, which he couldn't do, now he's just going to tax our fuel more.
Yes, and then he's like, no, we mustn't be against this fuel increase because they're trying to get more revenue, they're trying to get money, and this is not, the government is not about popularity. I'm like, if you did your job, people won't be opposed to you
this is
increasing
it, right?
things. And it's like, guys, we can't.
So he is the perfect illustration of the problem, because the reason that the municipal workers are striking is they say they want an increase. There is no more money in the coffers.
Mm.
The municipality can't run things properly because they're a disaster as well. But guess who pay the taxes? The citizens who are being punished by not having service delivery. So eventually what happens is the people who are paying, who are making who are greasing the wheels so that they can turn, stop paying, either because they don't have any money or because they're not getting anything for their money. And then all those people who are on the take, in other words, every politician, they all have nothing to gain from being in politics anymore. So that's what's happening too. Don't diss our Pretoria mayor. She's a doctor who cuts grass.
Oh. Okay.
I know nothing about our mayor. I didn't even know it was a woman. Okay. Fuel increase is ridiculous. Oil prices have plummeted. How is it possible? I mean, they're trying to. It's a stealth tax, like Simpiwe said. So they couldn't get VAT increased, remember?
Mm.
Because the courts eventually said you cannot pass this budget with this VAT increase. It's unconstitutional in some way, shape, or form. That was thanks to the opposition parties, the DA, the MK party, and the EFF, who managed to get that court case won. Because guess what? South Africans don't want to pay any more tax. So instead of realizing that they have to cut their cloth according to, cut their coat according to their cloth, the government. You've only got this much to spend. They're now trying to find other ways to gouge money out of you, me, Simpiwe, and everyone else.
Yeah.
So what they're going to do is go after your fuel, because they can just put an increase on the fuel price, and everybody who serves fuel to anyone else, wherever it's sold, they just have to pay the government their due. So it's a way of them to extort and squeeze more money out of us. It's unacceptable, but what are you going to do? And you know, the average South African, we think we're paying a lot for fuel, and we are. But poor people in this country, when they have to catch taxis and buses, they are being destroyed by the cost of transport. They worked out some years ago, I remember somewhere around 2012, there was a survey done, some research that was collected on the fact that up to 40% of some people's earnings are spent on just getting to and from work.
Yo, that's a lot.
It's disgraceful. If you think about people who have to go and do hard manual labor, they wake up at 4 a.m, they have to catch 2 or 3 taxis to get to where they're going, and they spend a full 40% of everything they get on just getting to and from work.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So you're going to punish those people, Enoch Godongwana. Nice. That's great. So much for empathy and caring.
Know that. And you know what's sad is that I think, like, with public transport, taxis in particular, they do not decrease. It doesn't matter what happens in the economy.
No,
like,
way.
They could have said, in fact, the fuel's going down, they're going to keep the same prices. So now that the fuel's going up, if you're paying 14 rand for that taxi ride, it's going to be 15 rand, and it will stay 15 rand for the next 3 years. And if there's another increase, it's going to be 16 rand in a few months. So it's really sad that, like, that is probably now 80%. People spending 80% on transport.
Well, Patrick Vianello says the DA speak with forked tongue. They increased the rates and taxes in Cape Town. Yeah, but at least you guys get services in Cape Town, you know?
And I think that's the point of, if it is working, if you are doing your job, no one complains. No one's like, oh my gosh, I'm paying 10 rand more for, like, petrol or levies or this. Because it's like, I see what you're doing. The issue here is that we do not see what the government is doing. So why am I paying you more? To do what? Just eat nice, and then I must suffer. It doesn't work like that. We must both be happy in this situation. And right now, no one's happy.
No. South Africa only borrow to pay for the day-to-day expenses, not for investment or growth. If you have a business, you know how this ends. Yeah, that's correct. Eventually, you run out of other people's money. That's what's happening. There's a new documentary on YouTube, says Bitcoin Buddha, about our taxi industry. I feel sorry for anyone in the passenger seat. Yeah, it's tough.
It's very tough.
Imagine we had a working rail system instead of the taxi mafia running public transport. Well, we used to, but then we started burning trains and destroying infrastructure, and the municipality stopped looking after it. And now it costs people 40% of what they take home to pay, you know, just to live. Taxes, theft. Yes, Bitcoin Buddha, I agree. Ricky says, like Mark Burke always says, there is no revenue problem. South Africa has an expenditure problem. What the hell's wrong with the left? They're praising Cupcake for his American lounge meeting. People have such fucking short memories. Deadly is snatched. Yeah, you're going to hear. I mean, you saw this. I don't know if you follow libs of TikTok on Instagram or X, but they put together a video with the word ambush in it from all the American media. President Cyril Ramaphosa was ambushed, and then they go through all the clips, and every news network is using the word ambush because the talking points have gone out. You know, the media are so ready to fall in line behind a certain narrative, which is why you can't trust them anymore. And if you know anybody, I keep saying this because it needs to be said, if you know anybody, it's usually old people, and they watch the TV news every night. They read articles in mainstream news services. They believe the commentariat that has misled them about everything in the last 15 years. You've got to get them off of that stuff. If it's your parents, if it's your friends, if it's your family, stop them, because it's bad for their mental health. They're being lied to. The stuff is just sheer propaganda and nothing else. And yet these are the same people who will claim that there is misinformation and disinformation everywhere. Stop listening to them. They're just really crappy at their job. You don't hate the media enough. You need to hate them more. Give me money for my G-Wagon. That's what the ANC always say. Yeah, that's right. I mean, I don't know how many people are in every cavalcade with a blue light that I've seen recently, but there are a lot of cars, and all of them are shiny and black and new,
mm-hmm.
and they are expensive.
Oh, yes.
And that's just the people around the car with the supposed VIP in it.
Yes. Do you know how many times we've seen, like, these minister cars passing by? Because our building is right by the highway, so we can see. And you just, like, I wonder who's passing today. Mm. You know, and you just, like, you see all these cars, you see the blue lights, and you're like, this is so much. Just for one person.
For what?
And I promise you, no one's trying to assassinate them.
No one even knows who most of the ministers are. We only know one or two of them.
Yeah, and even those guys, they're
not
worth...
We know Enoch Godongwana because he's trying to get our money.
Maybe right? him. Maybe we should put something on him. But I'm just saying, you know.
We know Gwede. We know Gwede.
Isn't she retired yet? She's still in.
No, Gwede Mantashe.
Oh. Oh, never mind.
The one with the underbite is the Ministry of... He's our acting president this week while Cyril was away.
This is why they're doing this nonsense about the fuel. This is why.
You think?
This is why. They were like,
you think, great. Okay, and then there's the white minister, John. Remember? Here's my white minister, John. There's him. Let me just think. We've got Paul Mashatile. He's like deputy president, but he doesn't really
What does he do?
Nothing.
And, like, in actual...
I've been asking this for years. What does a deputy president do?
Are we waiting to be the next president?
Why are we paying... for a deputy president and deputy ministers.
And also in this case, legit question, when the president is gone, isn't the deputy president supposed to...
But he was also away.
Okay, guys, this circus
spending
is very...
Spending our money overseas.
This circus, it must be nice.
So who else can we name? This is a good game to play, actually. Gayton?
Gayton McKenzie, yes, that is true. That is true. That is very true. Okay. Those are the new guys, hey? Okay, Herman Mashaba, he's in. Isn't he a minister?
No.
Oh, no.
Please. Sounds like he's having a mental breakdown. You know, watch his Twitter.
I don't know.
I can't think of any others.
I can't.
That's pretty much it.
That's five.
Yeah.
And don't we have like 32?
Oh, we've got... This is my whole point. They want to make us pay more for fuel, but they can't cut their own ministers. We need 10 maximum. 10. You know, we're a small country, hey?
We are. We don't need those many.
We don't need
people in leadership.
And each ministry has a deputy minister, and then they've got a director general, and they've got a deputy director general, and these are just the people.
And these people don't have qualifications.
No. Some of them do. Some of them do. Let's give credit where it's due. There are some people, particularly at director general level. There we go. Look at that.
Yeah.
That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times 4. Jesus. That's a lot of ministers.
NG is still there.
NG.
Betunana.
She's the Minister of Defense.
That's why the people were getting killed. It was at 30%. They went to Congo and gunned down. NG. Oh, wow.
What an embarrassment, really. That's a lot of people. I mean, 32 ministers are on that. That's not even including the president and deputy president.
Hey, guys, we must change
Bladen Zimande is still there. He's still got a job.
Why does it seem like parliament is like the place to go when I want to retire? Like, these people are old.
Patricia de Lille.
Ooh.
Oh, my God. What a disgrace. Really, I mean... I don't think if any of those people walked past you in the street, you would know who they were. You might recognize 4 or 5 of them.
And I'd still be like, I know you from somewhere, but,
yeah, but
I'm
you
not
wouldn't
sure.
Like, but you wouldn't, if you were an assassin, you wouldn't know where to find these guys. So why do they need 10 cars in their blue light brigade and bodyguards? Who is trying to kill Bladen Zimande? No one even knows.
I think he's trying to kill
himself.
He's
alive anymore.
You know?
Like, nobody cares. Like, honestly, no one in the world. If Angie Mocheja walked past you in the shops, you'd go, that gogo looks familiar.
Mm.
But you wouldn't do any. I don't know anyone in this country who would go up and, like, try to steal her purse or whatever. You know? Hey, Gog Ange. What's happening there with the soldiers? Please, Jesus.
No.
Barbara Creasy, Minister of Transport, doesn't look like she catches a bus. Yeah, exactly. I wonder how she's meant to be looking after the public transport infrastructure, right? So why isn't she standing up to Minister Enoch Godongwana and saying, actually, you should not be trying to scalp South African passengers. You're taking advantage of them with this fuel thing. Nice. Aye, bo. Okay, easy to follow them. Just find them, follow the blue lights. They have Smolanyala skeletons, says Pumlani. That's why we need to look out for them. South Africa has more cabinet members per capita than the most developed countries and even some larger developing ones. Yeah, we have, I think we have the biggest cabinet in the world.
That's ridiculous. We need to change that. Cut it. Cut everything. Just cut it.
Right.
And then we'll make money. And then, like, also, Minister of Finance, start thinking creatively. Like, stop taxing South Africans. I think that's always been the base of, like, how our Minister of Finance has always moved. Tax, tax, tax. Right now, you can't do that. Think creatively. There are other ways. Talk to people that have gone and studied finance and whatnot and accountants. They can tell you that there's other ways of getting money without taxing South Africans, because it doesn't matter which way you pull at. VAT, the fuel. We don't have the money for it. We really don't. Mm-hmm. You know, you might even want to tax us for something else. We don't have the money for it. So stop. That's not an option.
You know when you squeeze a cloth and no more water comes out?
That's where we're at. It's done. It's done, Chief. So stop taxing us. Whatever you're thinking, just stop. Bring up over. And then come up with solutions. And we'll listen and follow you. But until then.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. The boards of our SOEs look the same. It's full of cadres. Well, I mean, tell me what the board of SAA are still doing. I mean, like, there's a...
Aren't they always needing a bailout? Oh, gosh, Nabo.
I don't even know if they've got planes at the moment, but it's still a thing. And there's a board, and those people are paid.
Okay.
Guys, anyway, let's turn our attention to some other things. Otherwise, we're going to go crazy this morning. So... the South African who won the World's Strongest Man. What's his name? Reino, what?
Neil.
Is it Neil?
Yeah.
Reino Nel. Sorry.
Choice enough.
Reino Nel. Huge, powerful, strong guy. I love it. I love that we are the country with
DNA,
the strongest man.
Just RSA.
There we go.
Like, look at that.
Jesus.
And apparently
look at them lifting those trophies. Those trophies probably weigh, 150 kilograms. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so apparently he was the underdog in this competition, and he was competing with guys that had already won this before.
Oh.
And they thought he wasn't going to make it past the group stages, and look at him.
You know? Apparently here, somebody said to me that he's going to grow the strength sport in South Africa.
Oh, okay. One biltong at a time. Let's go.
But it's not bodybuilding. It's weightlifting. It's a strongman. This is a strongman competition, so they have to pull a... bucky and push a truck and lift heavy things. And I mean, you have to be a real machine to get that stuff.
Like,
right.
Just even trying to push a car, a regular car. You know, when your petrol has run out or it's overheated and you kind of just, that takes like 4 or 5 men.
Yeah.
Like, imagine now someone pulling a whole bucky. Oh, wow. Shout out to him. I'm actually very impressed.
Okay, well, I am too. I think it's great. I said on Wednesday when we had Alan on the show, there were three things on Wednesday we could celebrate before we went into the Oval Office with Cyril. We won this strongman competition.
Yes.
African Cup of Nations.
Yes.
Right?
Also with that,
before we move on,
I'd like to say I'm very happy with the boys. Halala, halala. But you guys have to keep on winning for it to be normalized now, so that we can celebrate at like Springbok level. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the pressure
now. No, they're nowhere
now.
Near that, but we'll take the small win.
I'm just saying that's the pressure now. Keep winning. Like, keep this up.
No, sure.
So that we can all like now on Fridays do like Bafana Fridays. You know what I mean? Like,
that would be nice.
That is just an idea that I'm planting to the boys, because it would be nice to celebrate you guys.
The other one is that we won a gold medal at the Chelsea Flower Show. don't laugh, Simpiro. We're going to take what we can get.
Hey, just repeat that.
We won a gold medal at the Chelsea Flower Show. No, there's a South African, what would you call him, a landscape gardener or horticulturalist or whatever. He had beautiful pink proteas and like this red. No, Chelsea Flower Show is a big thing if you're a gardening person, you know. It's a big deal. I mean, the king went there and everything.
I'm trying to be serious.
No, you're not. So that's the third thing that we won.
Wait, there's a whole competition for flowers.
There he is. That's the guy. You see? No, that guy's famous in the gardening world. Simpiwe, you...
So wait, what, you get points for what, cutting and
no, it's like a little, you have to make a garden. So it's a, you get a certain plot and you have to make a garden, and it has to be, all the plants have to look fantastic, and I think it runs for a few days.
So what, he put what, the
each country here? Each country comes and does an exhibition. It's like a World Trade Fair but for plants. All right. Okay.
No DNA, just RSA.
Yeah, very good. I see Christian Amanpour eventually got around to interviewing Ronald Lamola. I don't know how well that went, but I don't think so. He says it was not an easy outing. This is Ronald Lamola. We had expected that it would be robust, it would be engaging, and it would involve facts. But how embarrassing. So, I mean, Christian Amanpour doing heavy lifting there for the South African government. Who knows why? I also heard this week that Scott Adams, the guy, the Dilbert cartoon guy, who's become a bit of a political commentator, he told everybody that he has cancer. You know, Joe Biden has also come out and said he's got cancer.
With Biden, I think we knew something was off with that man.
Well, yeah, but everybody was lying about Biden for the longest time. What I want to say about Scott Adams quickly, we'll get back to Biden in a second. But Scott Adams said, and he apparently got a call from the president. He's been given lots of support online, and you know, he's a really, really cool, thoughtful guy. He said, like, I'm dying. I don't want any of that, like, you're going to beat this nonsense. He's like, no, we all die from something. We're all dying. It's just at different rates. He said he doesn't want anyone feeling sorry for him. He is ready for this. Let's go. He's not going to try and fight it. He's not going to go for any treatments or anything. He's going to just see it through. I think that's kind of dignified and brave. And you don't see that very often these days, because you see people going, no, you've got to live, you've got to live. We'll do everything we can to keep you alive. And it takes a very tough person to go, no, I know what this means. And I get to say goodbye, and I've got maybe a couple of weeks, a couple of months.
Yeah.
Maybe if I'm lucky, a couple of years. But this is my story, which I think is tremendous. So I think it's awful that he's got cancer.
Yes.
But you know, something's going to get all of us. And at least Scott Adams showing a little bit of real dignity and bravery there. So I like it. Okay, when we come back, we will get into a bunch of other stuff, including the stories that Simpiwe wants to talk about this morning and a whole lot more. Don't go anywhere.